Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. It is Friday, which for the last few weeks means that we are live on both the Facebook and YouTube, and we're going to be sitting here chatting. Hopefully you're enjoying a pretty good lunch, or you're riding your car to lunch or to work, or you're staying home and quarantining like you should. So either way, we hope that we can provide you with an entertaining and educational hour. Today, I am joined by two members of, I don't know if we're officially a peer group or if I just use you guys as my sounding board every now and then, but we've got a group that we hang out, and I've got with me Chris Meraz and AJ Gomber. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Very good, but this was supposed to be like Fight Club. You weren't supposed to mention the group that we're in.
Oh, see, that's me as a rookie member.
That's a problem.
That's it. All right. Well, it's private, so nobody can find us. So,
yeah.
You know. All right. So, Chris has been on the show before. I got a very nice response when you were on, Chris. People were like, oh, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Have him on again.
Yeah, they just don't know me yet.
Yeah. AJ, you have not been on the show before, but you do have a lot of wisdom to share, and that's why I asked you to come on. So why don't we do this? Let's go first to AJ, and why don't you introduce yourself, your company, where you're at in the country, and just tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So we've been in business since June 2007. We have a managed service provider business called Technology Visionaries here in Woodbridge, New Jersey. We service predominantly law enforcement, municipalities, nonprofits, property managers, and any professional service organization that requires technology to run their business. We also have another division called Prism Voice, which is hosted voice for IP services as well. We have a staff of three technicians, one administrator, and myself. I'm here alone in my office that no one's here because everybody's working from home.
All right. And you guys are doing good during the COVID?
So far, we're doing okay. We were really busy, which is probably similar to most IT providers out there, that you got slammed with remote work requests. And we've done a pretty good job of staying ahead of that. We've also allowed our clients to leverage our own infrastructure to remotely access their computers because they're like in the realm of municipalities, they typically don't work remotely. They're all in the borough hall or town halls. So we're able to quickly enable them to work remotely, which I think is really benefiting them.
All right.
So we're doing okay as a result, but it's gotten back kind of the normal sense right now. For the moment, our phones aren't lit up, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Chris, you're in Oklahoma, and I thought I read somewhere that you have people trying to get to the beach. Where is there a beach in Oklahoma?
We have a lot of lakes. And so
you call those beaches?
We're going to assume that was the reference, or it may just very well be that, unsurprisingly, people are trying to get out of Oklahoma for a bit and make their way south to the Gulf Coast in Texas. Or flights are so cheap, maybe they're doing a direct flight to Orlando. I don't know. I've not had too many people I know of going that route.
All right. And Chris, your company is called Your IT out of Oklahoma City. And any new news with your company?
No. So nothing's changed since we spoke last. We started up in 2009. Our focus is on small businesses, professional services with a heavy emphasis on cybersecurity. And so far we've seen good stuff. Through everything at this point, my internal feeling is that this month May is going to kind of be that deciding factor when we see a lot of the changes with businesses, whether they're going to have to fold in the towel or thrive. But we've actually increased our marketing. We're looking for new business. We're talking to people. So far we're doing good.
All right. So Before we go into any sort of topic, I usually like to ask guys and gals that are on the show, because there's going to be some gals coming up soon. What's kind of, you know, happened in the last week or so, good or bad? What's the one thing that has stuck out for you guys?
AG, why don't you dive in first?
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. My personal feeling is, as the state of technology goes with companies, I think there's been a big push from the government to relax compliance requirements. So like you can do telemedicine and stuff like that over Zoom calls, where typically it would be a no-no. Right. So I see there's a lot of that happening. What I'm most concerned about is that our clients don't just think that absolves them from risk and from the possibility of having a breach or a cybersecurity incident, or because they're relaxing their own security controls. So just because I think feel the government is saying it's okay if you work this way temporarily, I am trying to instill my clients that you even though they say certain things are okay, you know, it doesn't mean we're relaxing the way we do things here. We're not going to allow you to connect your personal computer to your company network because that prevents a risk and things of that nature. So for me, that's kind of been top of mind recently, because I feel like it's setting a mindset of, well, we don't need two-factor authentication. We don't need these certain security things that we typically preach to our clients to have, because they're relaxing some of these requirements. Hmm.
Chris?
I've been incredibly impressed with just kind of our community as a whole, from vendors to colleagues to, you know, coaches and resources throughout this entire situation of providing resources, helping with marketing. I don't know how many spur of the moment calls and groups you guys have been a part of, but for me, it's been quite a few of, let's just kind of get together and think what's next and what do we need to do and how are we going to start going back on site and what's that policy going to look like and how do we communicate that? And I've just been really impressed at how this whole community has kind of come together to help each other through this, and not only just get through it, but in most cases, trying to find ways to excel and grow through it. And that's been really encouraging for me.
All right. So one of the things that I've been toying with a couple of customers is they want to know now the new normal for them. Hmm. When they, you know, are allowed to go back to work, what do they do with the people who really don't want to come back? They want to be able to work remote going forward, whether it's, you know, part-time remote or just full-time remote, because now they know they can do it. So that's going to be an interesting conversation that I have. I only have a couple of customers that are asking, but they're asking. So
I think for us is like, we have an office space, right? So we work in an office every day, our entire staff, and until we have to go on at a client site. And it does require a shift in your management style. You know, we're not really wired for that right now. I'll admit that we're not the area that I'm not the strongest in is really that, that accountability management style that works really well in a remote environment. So I'm doing my best effort to kind of improve on that, so that if that ends up being the case that we're working remotely long term, that we can still manage the business to the best of our ability.
All right.
I'm just curious what you've been telling your clients, because for me that makes a lot of sense. I think remote has massive benefits and we're a huge fan of it. A lot of people are, you know, with AJ, they've not done it before, so they don't know how to do it or what it looks like. So I'm curious what you've been telling your customers that have been asking you.
So for the two specific customers that asked me, basically we're on hold. I said, you know, why don't we deal with this when the time comes? Because, you know, I think the bigger discussion is going to be, what's that going to look like for their office? Now, for law firms, you know, a lot of what they do, at least the, for instance, one of them is an insurance defense firm. So they don't have customers coming to the office on a regular basis. So it's not like they need to see people and have a space to see people. What they have to do is have communication between an attorney and his paralegal, and maybe a department needs to have communication and things of that nature. But their software, for the most part, is an on-prem software. So they've got to be able to do things like manipulate PDFs and work in their case management system and, you know, do all these things. And the remote side of that slows things down. It's not as easy and as simple. If somebody gets a discovery disk or claims documents, they've got to upload that. And if it's a full CD of stuff, and we're talking, 500, gigs of stuff, that's got to be uploaded to the server. That's going to kill bandwidth for them. So it's going to be a logistical thing as to what impact will it have long term. And they're dealing with stuff now where they're realizing every day at around 4:15, 4:30, I've got one firm that's calling me saying, oh, everything is slow right now. And I have to remind them, well, you realize all your secretaries are trying to upload their documents that need to be at the court by 5 o'clock. And he's like, oh, yes, yes, yes. And it's those sort of things that now have to be dealt with. Whereas before, when it was done in offices, or, this firm has 6 remote offices, so each office wasn't impacting the main office. Well, now they are, because they're all remoting into the one main office. So it's a big hit. So it's something where we're going to address it when it really comes time. There will be, I think what they're going to have to do, they allow attorneys to work from wherever. I think they're going to have to come up with some sort of plan for regular staff, because what they'll do is the staff will say, well, I'll just go somewhere where they allow me to work remote, whether it's, one day a week, or, a mother who's got a kid at home and they want to leave at 3 every day, but they want to be able to do their work after hours. So it will be interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point is, even amongst specific industries, there's not going to be a one solution for everyone. It's going to be interesting to work through.
Yep.
I think there's an opportunity to discuss with your clients also is, what is version 2.0 of your working from home scenario look like? Because there's a possibility of this, there being a resurgence of COVID-19 in the fall, right? So right now we've kind of had to implement strategies that may not be a good long-term solution. So what we're looking to do is, during this middle ground where they're kind of loosening up restrictions, is figure out like what that looks like if we want to enable them to work more efficiently and solve some of these problems that you're experiencing with your law firms. What does that look like? So we've spending a lot of internal energy around what does that project plan look like for our clients and what recommendations we can make for them to work more efficiently, depending on what the outcome of working from remotely looks long term. Is it a portion of their work first? Is all the workforce? Mm-hmm. And it comes to telephone systems as well. Many clients don't have telephone systems that are really, architected around the ability to work from home.
That is true. So I did have one customer that literally, they are voice over IP. So the idea that when they realize, I can take my phone home and work. So they were in an office where they didn't have 2 network ports, one for the computer, one for the phone. They were doing the pass through.
Right.
And of course, they didn't want, me or anybody to come help them. Like, we can do that ourselves. We don't need to pay you to do that. But of course, the next 2 days was me fielding phone calls of, I took my phone home, but I can't get my computer to work. Or the phone's not connecting to the internet. I don't have another cable. How do I connect it? Oh, I can't connect my phone to the Wi-Fi. And stuff like that.
So we the thing we've learned in dealing with phones is that even if you have a power over Ethernet switch to provide power to the phones in the office, we still provide power adapters in a box, because if they take their phones home, they need power. So they need to take their AC. They need to have an AC adapter. So we had clients that were scrambling. Luckily we have power adapters in stock as a result.
Those are some great notes. I had added a few things to my to-do list from that conversation. That was good stuff.
Yeah, that's true. This customer actually already had the power brick, so that wasn't an issue. And I remember, I have a big old box of Polycom, AC bricks, because I use the PoE switches. And I almost either sent it back or I was going to toss it or whatever. Now I'm thinking, I got to keep those.
Yeah, we built the latest Yale Link phones actually have built-in Wi-Fi, which is a big win for our newer clients, because they're able to just take them home with an AC adapter, sit them on a desk, plug them in the wall, and connect to the Wi-Fi, and they work. So much so, I built a rolling travel case with 3 phones in there to demo for clients, as well as a I tether them to my iPhone to demo them over Wi-Fi with USB power adapters. So it's a completely wireless solution to demo as well. So there's a lot of options with the newer phones.
What VoIP provider are you?
So we have we actually partner with SkySwitch,
okay,
which is a white label provider. So we handle all the tax compliance stuff internally.
All right. So you're white labeling that. So I'm looking at a couple of things. So even though I've been, you know, touting Freedom Voice, I do have to keep my eyes and ears open. So I've had a couple of listeners ask, you know, what other options are there out there? So
SkySwitch. SkySwitch is, I think, a little bit under the radar. Mm-hmm. They run it in the NetSapiens platform. It's quite good. There's a lot of features available. We can do video conferencing, business SMS. They actually have Nomo Robo integration with the phones as well. So we can provide spam calling blocking as part of the phone system. They just keep adding more value into the service that we can provide to our clients. And it's been working really well for us. It's, you know, geo-distributed infrastructure between three locations. So it's highly available. It's really robust feature-wise, and the cost structure is very good as well. You can make really decent margins at it. And we really like voice as a result, and they're a good partner. They have an event each year that I learn a lot at when I go to called Vectors. You know, coming from the MSP side and moving more into voice, you know, there's a learning curve, obviously. There's a learning curve from a tax and compliance standpoint. That's generally what keeps people out of the voice side of things. They get nervous about filing all the different taxes of the FCC, and there's E911 fees, and you really need to hire a law firm to do this. And there's a couple in the industry that do it well. Billing voice services is painful because you really can't do it in, you know, some of the more common PSAs like, you know, ConnectWise, AutoTask, and TigerPaw, or Synchro, or anything like that. So that presents a challenge. Yeah. Well, you can't even do that because there's so many lines of taxes. You need like, what's it, SureTax or one of those big tax companies to calculate all the taxes that get sent on the bill, because every county in some states is different.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
there could be six line items worth of taxes and fees on a bill. So that's what most people do. That's the biggest reason why people don't want to white label themselves, yeah, which is why they go to a Citricom or Vonage and resell that product to just become an agent of them.
Yeah, Freedom Voice. That's one of the reasons I chose them. They take care of all that, whether I sell as a partner or a referral. And that was like
the margins are so much better going white label though.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Not now, but we'll talk about it. you know, I wrote down a note here, but we'll skip that because we'll never finish the show if we get off on that tangent. Chris, were you going to say something in the middle of his VoIP?
No, just that that's the exact reason that we've partnered is margins are better, but liability is higher, obviously, if you're doing it yourself and mess up those taxes. So we just opted to partner with Citricom and go that route, though we're going to start looking at Microsoft Teams in the second half of this year and see how that voice solution ties into everything, because that's intriguing.
Intriguing because it's free right now.
No, not so much the voice aspect is not, I don't believe it's free with the current licensing. Just the whole fact of having that unified communication piece where you can do VoIP through the Microsoft 365. It's just intriguing to me. I've got to look into it a little bit more and see how it fits into everything.
All right. Okay. So we had had an interesting discussion over the last week, and I'm going to use my scenario. And when I put the title on this where I said, just say no, because there are scenarios that come up where if I see a certain number of red flags or stop signs with a customer, I will just simply turn and walk away. And I've done that. And it cost me. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I walked away from, you know, a customer that I would have gotten $150,000 for a 3-month project. And, but a lot of people aren't like me where they would have said, why don't we bust through some of those stop signs and see what we can do to help them? So I wanted to bring that up as a discussion point. And I guess I'll first start with the question of when a customer or a prospective customer is asking you for all your information up front, what's the line that you don't cross with them? Or what do you, you know, I guess a better way to ask it is, what are you comfortable telling them and uncomfortable, you know, not telling them?
Yeah. I'll jump in first there. So we're going through a current situation that's similar to that, where the number of questions that we were emailed was staggering. And it was, there was a point of where is that line of free consulting versus education or having the client do their due diligence, right? And so for us, the tactic that we decided to go with after lots of conversations, and AJ was actually key in helping us think through a lot of this, was, you know, we knew that in our situation, a lot of those questions were valid, but too many and really kind of gave away too much of our kind of secret sauce and how we operated. And we couldn't tell if it was them again doing their due diligence or if they were trying to, you know, get this information and implement things themselves. In this particular situation, we found ourselves, you know, we just said great questions, valid questions, too many for us to simply reply. Let's have a 25-minute phone call, determine what is really needed here, and kind of go forward at that point. The line came at that point when they simply didn't want to have a follow-up call. And so we just said, if their time's not valuable enough to help us think through that, then that's a pretty big red flag. You know, and we're going to kind of stop at that point. So for us in that particular situation, was how we kind of determined how far we were going to go down that path.
So they wanted you to answer all the questions, but they didn't want to have a phone call about the questions.
Correct. Yeah. And again, because we couldn't have a follow-up call, there's no way to determine how valid that request was. You know, I don't question prospects that, you know, unless it's something obvious, but it seemed genuine that they, you know, just wanted to have kind of this comparison sheets between, you know, their companies they're talking to kind of lay it out and really compare things a little better, which I get, but that's not how we operate. You know, we don't do that. And so the fact they were not willing to give up their time for a phone call, just to clarify some of that, you know, our time's valid as well, and we're not going to, you know, fill that spreadsheet up for them.
Yeah. I guess that would be a big old red sign for me, is that if you're not willing to sit face to face or have a follow-up call, then I'm not going to just simply, you know, send over my price list and let you, you know, decide that way. AJ, what's your comfort level and your line of demarcation?
So I think when Chris kind of, you know, brought this up, there was a lot of people kind of saying walk away. They're, you know, they're just not a good fit. And I'm personally not of that mindset. I'm not the person that will just at face value say these people are out of their mind. Why would they ever ask this? And I don't want to deal with them. You know, at the point where Chris had the conversation, said, let's have a call about it, and they said no, then I think we were in alignment that if they don't feel that the time is well spent, well, one of our requirements is that you have to be willing to make the partnership work. You know, you're not fitting that requirement. But, you know, I think there's an important point to ask the client. So why is this information important to you? You know, why are you asking this question? And just because we think the question may not be valid, they may have a valid reason for asking that question. You know, they may have gotten burned by their previous IT provider saying, you know, they said they were doing this and they really weren't doing it. So it would be in their best interest to qualify what you're actually doing. Granted, I think some of the questions were very pointed and surprisingly pointed, and mm-hmm. I would ask myself why, but I still wouldn't assume that the questions are irrational. I would take the time to ask them why those questions are important to them. And then after that point, if I thought, I understand why you're asking that, but I still think you're nuts, then we're going to part ways. But there may be a real valid reason for asking these what at the surface level would be an unreasonable question.
Yeah, one thing that I kind of came to the conclusion on was a lot of the questions were, you know, adequate and come up during the course of onboarding or during the course of the normal sales process. And in fact, they were kind of a catalyst to start putting together an FAQ for our website about, you know, what's our process look like and what are some of those things we do and how do they determine some of that. So, you know, if nothing else, I think it, when people get into a difficult situation, where maybe they're tempted to just say, oh, that's the line, you know, take 30 minutes and think through, well, is that valid? And if nothing else, consider maybe adding that to part of your process in the future to prevent that from coming up again. So I know for us, we're going to implement some of those things and try to answer some of those questions or clarify some of those things just as part of our process or on our website, just to help people down the road.
Yeah, there's a good point there, because I think there's the component that, you know, they're trying to understand your value proposition, mm-hmm. right? And if some of those questions, you know, may be tough and you may not have an ideal answer for them that you're like, ah, I'm kind of embarrassed to tell them the answer on this. It's a good opportunity to take the time to answer those questions, even if it's internally, to increase your value proposition to your clients and clarify those questions and maybe get ahead of them in the sales process. So I'm in agreement with you. I think the FAQ approach is very beneficial as an outcome of having a prospective client with a difficult set of questions and say, listen, let's just add this to our punch list of things that we answer ahead of time so that it builds that trust. Because the reality is our businesses are built on trust. And if you're going to avoid answering these tough questions, you're not going to build that trust, not build that value, and not, as a result, get that client and get the revenue that you want to get out of that particular engagement. Mm-hmm.
Do you think we're in a time where some providers are providing too much information? For instance, I'll use an example of, you know, do you tell your prospective clients what tools you use down to, you know, which RMM product, which AV, you know, what do you use if you don't use an RMM? You know, customers don't walk into an auto body shop and say, can you tell me what tools you use? Is that a Craftsman wrench or anything like that? But are we in a point where, you know, some MSPs or some IT providers or computer shops, you know, are so transparent that when they come to us and they're asking us, well, do you use this product? You know, are we giving too much away or are we holding too much back?
So this is something you, Chris, and I talked about specifically, mm-hmm. right, Chris? And my thought is that the right client shouldn't care. The right client should care about the outcome of our services, not how we achieve that outcome. So we could all have the same RMM tool, the same PSA tool, the same antivirus, but the outcome could be very different depending on how we apply our expertise with our mm-hmm. tool set to achieve that outcome. So personally, I will state that to a client, you know, a prospective client saying, well, what do you use? It really shouldn't matter. What should matter to you is the outcome, our ability to enable you to perform your job at its optimal capability and focus on your business rather than the information technology side of your business. So I'm not sure if it's coming from the standpoint of the IT provider just giving up too much information, or, you know, and that may be reactionary based on having not the best prospect in front of you. That's digging into that those questions because they want to know every intricacy of what you're doing for them. And to me, those are the prospective clients that I don't think are the right fit. If you want to, you're not here to micromanage what I do. What you really care about is that we're achieving the outcome that we agreed upon.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times if the client is asking for those kind of specific items, Marvin, I think you're right. They've had a bad experience at some point. You know, they're trying to, they think that they know what they're asking when a lot of times they don't. Then you have the technician or the salesperson of the MSP who's going in and doesn't have a good sales process. And so they're trying to dump all this information thinking it's going to impress the client. Whereas the client's not going to, for the most part, know about, you know, PSAs and RMMs and different security vendors and, you know, they're not going to know, or they're not going to know the difference between, you know, Bitdefender Gravity Zone or Bitdefender Home. They're just, so there's a lot of information that gets tossed around that's not good. And it really comes down, when AJ says it's about that experience and how we implement stuff, you may use the exact same tool set that I use, but how we use that's going to be different, and how we get that outcome they're looking for is going to be different. I'm not a good cook. I enjoy cooking. It's therapeutic to me. I love making flavors. I have a pretty nice knife. And it helps me be better at cooking, but a really good chef could have a really shitty knife and do stuff better than I can. So the tools we use to get the outcome, I think we have to be clear and let the prospect know what I use, how I use it is really going to come down to my experience and my skill level to make sure that we're achieving what you're trying to get. And at that point, if they're still insistent, that's going to be a huge red flag as well of trying to decide, you know, if we've not established that trust already, then my sales process was broken 4 steps ago, and we're going to have a hard time moving forward any longer. So if they want a specific tool, I need this for compliancy. Well, then maybe there's a way to discuss it. But for the most part, no, I don't think we need to divulge, you know, everything we're going to be using and how we're going to be using everything to achieve those outcomes.
So Chris and I take Sandler sales training. What's the saying in Sandler, Chris, that don't answer a question that the prospect didn't ask?
Yeah, don't draw seagulls, and I won't get into that whole thing. Yeah, but yeah. Don't answer questions they don't ask, and don't provide them solutions maybe that they're not looking for. But it's a difficult place to be because we think that maybe we know where this conversation is going to go, but you don't need to tell them stuff if they're not asking for it at that point.
All right, that's good words to go by. I don't give it a lot of information, and yeah. I get referred, and it's like, can you fix my problem? Okay. How much does it cost? Okay. And that's pretty simple. And we'll talk about tools maybe down the road when somebody goes, hey, can you show me how to do that? I can't, because the tool I have, you know, I can't just show it to you and all of that stuff. The things that I can show you, I will. And most are okay with that. I like what you said, AJ, the right client shouldn't care. Although,
yeah.
Doesn't always translate, does it?
I mean, we've been really selective. I mean, we started in 2007 as an MSP from the beginning. We were never a break fix shop. I would say break fix is maybe 1-2% of our annual revenue. It's a very low number. And that number is, probably 1% is just a couple of people that referred us to a smaller client that we just help out. And it's a couple of times a year. But generally, we may do out of scope work for our contracts, but, you know, really it's all managed services. And I think we've been successful for that one reason. We've been very selective in our clients. And the clients that, you know, we've had clients, we've had clients or prospective clients, we sat down with them and I've told them that we include workstation refreshes as part of the agreement. So if you buy the computer from us, we'll do all the labor to swap it out for you, which is a very common practice in our industry. And the response of a prospect I had years ago was, well, that's great. So we never have to buy new computers again. And I'm like, whoa, time out. Like, you know, like you need to, you know, invest in technology, right? We'll support it to a point, but if we tell you have to buy a machine, you have to buy a machine. You have to take our recommendations. So, you know, there are certain red flags with clients. And if they start asking us about the specific technology, and if I qualify, there's a valid reason for them asking, I have no problem answering the question. But if they're just asking because they want to know every aspect of what we're doing to provide the service for them, they're not a good fit. You know, they want to do what we do, but not, you know, without the knowledge. And that's a real problem for us. So, you know, the clients that we tend to want to attract is the ones that really care about, like, what's the end goal here? The end goal is to reduce your downtime, ensure the safety and integrity of your data, and minimize cybersecurity threats. You know, those clients that align with that method of thinking are great clients for us.
All right. Do either of you deal with shadow IT on a regular basis?
No. So for us, at the size of most of our clients, and the regular meetings and conversations we have with the ownership, there's not a whole lot of people we have that are trying to kind of sneak around or go behind our backs or anything. We've got pretty good relationships with most of our people. Again, if we were dealing with large enough clients, we would run into that, I'm sure. But up to now, we really haven't.
I can think of two occasions off the top of my head, and they're relatively minor. And it's usually, a younger staff member coming in that's technologically savvy, that has a good idea, and not necessarily a bad idea. It's generally poorly implemented when they do it. They're just not thinking big picture. They're putting in a home router as an access point in the corner of animal shelter that doesn't have good Wi-Fi or something like that. Or they want to, a few people hate G Suite and they want to set up G Suite instead of Office 365 and realize you can't do it, right? So we've had maybe one or two occasions of that over the years, but generally it's not very common. We do spend a lot of time training our clients that we want to be the one throat to choke. So, a lot of companies do vendor management or vendor liaison, you may call it. And we try to instill that in our clients that just, run everything by us. We may bow out of it. We may be able to refer you to someone else, but at least talk to us about it before you go and make a decision, whether it be refresh your copier fleet or whatever. Just talk to us first, and we'll kind of come to an idea of how you should approach it long term. But we have had a few occasions, but typically it's not prevalent, thankfully.
All right. Just like to gauge where it's out there, because I deal with a couple of juniors and it's fun.
I was going to say that when you asked that question, I'm curious, that seems like a question you asked because you've run into that. So I want to hear your story.
I run into it a lot. And actually, so now the funny thing is I've got two customers that they've got full-time IT. I mean, they're big enough. They need somebody there full-time, but they're there for desktop support. And, being the frontline, help desk. And for the most part, it usually is fine until they get, a little antsy and they think, well, I can run this network and, I can save us some money. So my best story is the junior who thought that he would run the case management system over a VPN. And this was a SQL-based case management system that tied into a pretty big database. And it wasn't something where, it was just a web browser to get to the application. There needed to be a full client installation on the desktop. And so he, on his own, when he found out that there was a VPN, he logged into, so their office was in West Palm Beach. He connected to a station in the Miami office and connected it to the domain, which, that can be done. And as a junior, tech, he had the rights to do that. Started installing stuff and, thought he had, had the big savings in mind, and tried to convince the managing partners that, Marvin doesn't know what he's talking about, because this program, we can install it over VPN and, we can save money and not use him and stuff. So they didn't tell me this for about a week. And they were trying to convert all of these workstations to run over the VPN. And they started corrupting the SQL database.
Ouch.
So from that point on, didn't have any more trouble with that junior. One of the stories. That's just,
I can see right before COVID-19 started taking hold, we were in the process of doing a co-managed IT agreement with a prospective client. And I was trying to be real clear on where the edges were of the roles of responsibility, what that person on site would be responsible for and what we would be responsible for. So I can see in those scenarios it getting kind of messy.
Yeah, it's fun because, in the beginning, you draw the lines. It's like you can touch desktops, you can't touch servers. But of course, if they're installing software to the desktop, you know, what do you do? So the
fuzzy middle section.
Yep, the fuzzy middle. And then I just had, so I don't know if you guys listened, what was it, 2 weeks ago, where I talked about my one customer who came to the office because he wanted to buy monitors to use at the house because he wanted double monitors at home. He was also the guy that was worried that he didn't have enough money to make payroll the next week and was, you know, trying to get his PPP money and all that stuff. So he brought back the two monitors yesterday because they weren't as big as they were 24s and he had a 27 and a 30 something at the house and they didn't match or whatever. So he brought those back and he had to tell me a story because last week their Wi-Fi went out at the office and I had him set up with an old open mesh access point. And I told him, I said, okay, no get problem. I'll come and swap it out and do whatever. And I put another access point in. Well, he said, I wanted to thank you for reacting so quickly, but I just wanted to, you to know that I had gone out and bought a Wi-Fi router so we would have been covered. And I said, no, you wouldn't have been. So funny folks. And he's an attorney. He doesn't know tech.
Marvin, I'm curious, of not knowing this platform very well, I don't know how well we can engage with the audience, but I'd be curious if others are able to share kind of what some of their red flags are, some of the lines that they have set up when they're talking to prospects.
Yeah, we don't know who's watching, but for those that are, we didn't really go through and list red flags, but, you know, my red flag is if you're in my city and I can't physically come see you and your network, don't expect us to come and support you. That's, you know, like my number one thing. I don't give quotes and prices over the phone. I actually use a philosophy where I tell people my rates are different based on your network, because some networks are more complicated than others and some support is needed in these areas more than others. So I don't tell them prices. If they want to ask for the hourly, I'll tell them this is my hourly price. But most of my customers don't pay that because they're on agreement. And if you want to pay hourly, we can do that. I don't recommend it because what may happen is we may not be available every emergency you have. And we talk about other stuff and things like that. So I don't reveal pricing. So that's another thing. But in terms of red flags, those are probably my two. If anybody in the chat, I don't know if John or Chad are still there. But if you guys have red flags or anybody else in the chat, if you want to throw it in there so we can see it, we'll talk about those. What are some other red flags that either of you guys have that, you know, either will make you cautionary, make you stop altogether and walk away?
For us, we're very big on our process. You know, so a client who is insistent on not following our process in terms of who we talk with, how we handle those meetings, what those expectations are, you know, we typically bow out from that type of stuff. We understand that it's their decision when it's all said and done. But like we have our process to make sure that we gather the information we need. So that's one big one. If people, you know, are real insistent of, no, just send me a quote. No, just give me pricing. You know, you don't need to talk to so-and-so. We don't engage in those conversations at all. I guess the good news is we've not had a lot of problematic sales meetings and prospects in our time, for whatever reason. So I'm curious, AJ, if you've run across any, what yours are also.
So, I would agree with what you just said is probably a big one for us, is if you're just kind of bucking the system, you're probably not a good fit. What's helped us a little bit also is kind of avoiding those scenarios is we start following that right fit call structure, that like the Tech Tribe offers. And so I'll typically have a discovery call with them on the phone, and that kind of gets me a better understanding of if I think it warrants me doing an on-site visit and talking to them. And recently we had someone call that said they have a Mac server and old Windows PCs, and the admin picked up the call, and I'm like, and I kind of said, listen, you have no idea about technology because there's no way in the world anybody would have that infrastructure. So she scheduled the call because I'm like, I'm not going there. It's not in the best section of New Jersey. It's in Newark. It's tough to park. I'm not going there without qualifying them a little bit. So I get on the phone, and sure enough, I had to apologize because she was absolutely right. They had a Mac server and Windows desktops, and the owner used a BlackBerry. And I'm like, these guys are not a fit for us.
Wow.
He's not going to take any of our recommendations. He wants to run his business the way he wants to run his business. And I said, you can tell the owner that. You can make me the bad guy and say they won't even talk to you because they just won't feel like you're going to take the recommendations and maybe help you get him to turn the corner and kind of take the recommendations of an IT professional. So that's obviously a big red flag for us. I do tend to kind of address those when I go on site, though. Yeah, I'll go on site and I'll see equipment that's really long in the tooth and that they haven't been investing in technology. And I'll kind of call that out right then and there, say, yeah, I can tell you right now, we're probably going to want to replace most of your equipment in a very short period of time. We recently took on a client that has a Windows 2012 server, I think it is. I think it's still under hardware warranty, but it's been extended. So it's quite old. And he was like, oh, yeah, when we replace the next year or two, I'm like, no. We're replacing this in 6 months. And you're going to tell me you're agreeable to that before we even move forward because I'm not taking on that liability. So I kind of address it that way. But I would agree, anybody that's trying to control the process is probably the major red flag for us.
Do you guys do onboarding in phases in the sense where, you know, not only do you do the, you know, the meeting, the installation of your, you know, dashboard software and stuff like that, but when it comes to something like an upgrade, do you have stages where you say this has to be done in X number of months, and then this has to be done if they're in an old infrastructure where they've got, you know, servers and workstations that are just old, they've got a firewall that isn't a firewall, I mean, stuff like that. Do you put together a timeline as to when all that stuff has to be done?
We do. We're big fans of the roadmap concept. And so, you know, several years ago, it would have been, you know, here's a upfront, you know, $20,000, $30,000 project to upgrade everything immediately. We've changed that now. We're kind of help them develop their 6, 12, 18-month roadmap. We typically try to stage our primary onboarding within that first month, tool set, you know, changing stuff over, and then we'll stage out some of those system replacements or whatever other big projects there may be to get them to our standard over however long that period is appropriate for the client. And that not only helps in the you know, the financial side and spreading that cost out for the client, but it also makes us look highly competent that we're putting together a plan for them where they've never had one before and showing them what that's going to look like. That's our typical process now.
Chris, so for a new prospective client where you go in, you see there's a bunch of work to be done, do you propose that all in one shot at the beginning, or do you get them as a client and then start making those recommendations?
Yeah. It depends, but it's primarily upfront. It's a lot of times it's part of our process. So for us, the majority of our clients go through a paid assessment and roadmap as part of their sales process with us. And so when we go to present that service agreement, we also present them with that roadmap and specific recommendations that they can take elsewhere. They can implement themselves at times, but part of our process in most situations is a paid assessment, audit, roadmap upfront that includes that. And then when they sign up, we just begin to implement those projects that we planned out for them.
Interesting. So I have this, you know, personal mindset that I want to eliminate any kind of speed bumps that'll slow down the sale. So I don't do any, I've never done an audit, not one. And
you mean before you get the client, you don't do an audit?
Correct. Never, okay. Never. Wow. I don't want to do it. So, I want to get them to sign the dotted line. I take it with we have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you think we stink after 30 days, I hand you back your check. And I'm actually tempted to do that after 90 days and doubling the return of the money that they spent with us, to really put our money where our mouth is and to accelerate the number of steps it takes to close a sale. You know, I want a one and done as much as possible.
Okay.
Now,
before you go on, how do you determine what the price is if you don't audit the network?
I think you can get a pretty good idea of a single site network with a walkthrough. I think you can do a pretty good job of understanding their network. Granted, there are things that you may get blindsided on, but I can't really think of the last time I have been blindsided and go, oh, wow, I didn't really think about the labor associated with supporting this line of business application or this server. We're pretty good about walking through and taking good notes and getting an understanding of the network. And we've been doing this long enough to get a good feel for it. Okay. And what I typically do in my sales process, not to go off on a tangent, but I'll do the Sandler bracketing thing, right? Before I even go down to the proposal side of things, I'll pretty much litmus test them and say, you know, I can tell you from our experience with a company your size and the complexity of your network and, you know, with the what you have in place, that typically our clients find that, you know, they're going to spend between this and this amount per month. Is this something that you're willing to spend? And so in some cases, that'll get us out of the need to do a proposal, which is, you know, time consuming. And sometimes I'll sell them against us. As a result, say, like, you know, I get that you've only been paying $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month, and we're going to be $4,000. You know, I get that's a big number for you. Like, how can you justify that? And I'll kind of put it back in the lap. So I do my best not to have to do proposals and to eliminate speed bumps. And when I'm doing a proposal, that is a high probability of sale.
Interesting.
And so let me add on to that is once we close the sale is when we go, and my position against like someone like Chris, for instance, is that listen, I'm not just here to sell you stuff. I'm here to actually understand your business, which takes time, understand how you work and make recommendations based on my experience in working with you, not just trying to sell you a big project from the get-go. So Chris, you're wrong.
Yeah. Ooh, and my goal is, you know, it's great that someone might come in and just pick you up and start running, but you have no idea what to expect down the road. Are they going to come back in 3 months and tell you that you've got $40,000 upgrades? Wouldn't you want to know that up front in advance and know how you can use that? So that's how I would counteract that, AJ.
We do have those conversations. Right. I mean, I do bring it up. I say, I can tell you right now, I'm going to recommend you need a new firewall. You need to refresh a third of your PCs. Your server needs to be replaced or moved to the cloud, and mm-hmm. your backup appliance would need to be replaced. Like, I have those conversations up front. I just won't mm-hmm. build it all out in the proposals just yet. And I'll qualify that with, like, I just don't know enough about your business by walking in here. Now, mind you, your process of doing a paid for audit or discovery makes a lot more sense, right? They're paying you for that output. Then it's well worth your time to do it. So if someone said, I want to pay you to do this, I wouldn't have a problem with it, right? They're paying for that service, but I'm not going to do any kind of free kind of consulting. And I do resist doing your model just because I feel like it's a speed bump.
Yeah, no, and that's right. And, you know, one of the things we've focused on the past, all of 2019 was finding ways to make it easier to do business with us. You know, that was kind of a mantra of let's work through that. And we were actually evaluating how we can kind of keep the process that we enjoy and that relationship we like building, but still eliminate it to some extent, because you're 100% right. That's a speed bump for a lot of people. So that's what's great about this industry. There's no 100% right or wrong way to do it. There's so many different ways that work for so many different people. And it's just finding what works best for, you know, you and your area and what you're comfortable with.
I don't know, Chris. Well, I mean, AJ just told you were wrong. So
yeah. This
it's is fun. Fight Club. Just, why don't you fight it back?
It's in New Jersey. I mean, I did say it was Fight Club in the beginning. So, you know,
just because he says he's right doesn't mean he is. He can say it all he wants.
And I'm never wrong. I'm only mistaken.
Yes. He's not been enlightened yet.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
AJ, I do need to correct you because you keep saying this New Jersey thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. You graduated high school from Cocoa Beach.
I did. Wow. Background check. I did.
Because, Satellite High here.
So I was born. Oh, wow. Right down the street. So I was born in New Jersey, and I lived down in Florida until I went to finished high school and moved back up here. So I'm, for the majority part, New Jersey. But I do miss the power pace of Florida.
New Jersey to Florida, back to New Jersey. How and why would you move down to Florida and then leave? Listen,
I didn't say I was intelligent. And at that age, I didn't have a control. It was wherever my mom took me, I went, right? So,
She wanted to get down to warm weather and the beach. And then you wanted to go back to Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, from a business perspective, I think Jersey is probably a great place to be. I didn't realize we're the number one population density dense state. I never realized that, actually. We have the highest population per square mile, I guess. And
there's only so much in New Jersey. I mean, you just keep piling people in there.
Yeah, we're stacked like three deep. It's crazy. But so from that perspective, it's great for business, I guess. I mean, I have a lot of peers of mine that I've known for over a decade that I never once ran across any of their clients, and they're just miles away.
Interesting.
All right. So, just wanted to get that Jersey thing squared away because I was going to say you're a beach guy.
I talk fast like I'm from Jersey, though, right?
You do. Yeah, you do. Slick.
I'm like constantly auctioning stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, just to go back and book in that point about auditing, I always do some sort of audit, and it might simply be me just plugging in my Fluke that will go out and tell me everything that's on the network now, just because I don't like to be blindsided. I don't like somebody telling me, we've got about 20 workstations and two printers. No, they got 45 workstations and, 13 printers and 10 servers, something like that. So that always kind of.
We got to dig into this just for a second, because you just reminded me of the main reason I don't do audits, the liability. So we own like Slitherus or Rapid Fire tools or whatever. Those tools that will help you, look through a network. My fear is you walk in there, you stick in a thumb drive, and a day later they get ransomware. Who are they coming after?
That's why you have insurance.
Yeah, I still don't want to go down that path. But for like a discovery in your case, Chris, do you have them sign a waiver or something like that? Or do you, Marvin, do you have them do that?
Well, I'll answer that I don't, because I'm just installing the Fluke for discovery. I'm not actually installing anything on their network. I don't need a desktop or a server to log into or anything. I just need an open network port.
Yeah.
And I'll get, I'm not asking for passwords. I'm not asking for, every single detail of, what's the OS and the drives. I'll get that later. My initial thing is I want to see what's on the network. What do you have that I need to know about?
Yeah.
And again, this is a, a paid service. So they, they're signing up for this, they're purchasing. It's not just, it's not a free audit where maybe you're just going in and saying, hey, get me on here, let me poke around real quick. This is something that they're purchasing and signing the agreement for to have that performed. So maybe the liability and the process is a little different on how we do it versus, a quote unquote free audit that someone else might do. And they just kind of hop on and start poking around.
Cause I had an opportunity recently that, there was some other competitors and the prospective client pulled out like a 150 page report that someone ran a Rapid Fire Tools Assessments for free. And I would never do that. I would never touch someone's network like that unless it's, we're engaged somehow.
Yeah, not for free, no.
Oh, no, that's too much for free. Jeez.
Yeah, and like it's, you ever look at those reports, they're mind-boggling, right? The typical end user is not going to understand it. But that's, an expense, number one. And number two, it's a, time intensive, right, to create that. So, and you're, in that case, you are installing software on their network. And to me, that's a risk I'm not willing to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that deep of an audit for me would be after the contract is signed.
And there's some value to do a snapshot in time, say, we just took you as a client. This is where you were when we took you on. And 3 months later, this is where you are now, and proving your worth. I think there's some real value in that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you came across a prospect and they threw that on the table and said, this is what, you know, our other, you know, client or our other provider that we're looking at, this is what they gave us, you know, can you do that? Is that a red flag?
Well, I think they probably were given it and they didn't ask for it really. And someone just, well, they may have asked for like, can you give us a price? And that was the process that they go through to develop a pricing structure for that. I would say, sure, we can do it, but we're going to do it for a paid assessment. I wouldn't do it for free.
I would ask them, that's an interesting report. I'm curious, what information did you get out of it? And then turn the conversation around into, you know, our expertise is going to help work through all this. And yes, we can help generate similar reports, but does it really provide you any value? Or, you know, what are you hoping to accomplish? You know, knowing someone can do these reports, turn it back to the outcome of what they want to, you know, have the results be. I'm real big on trying to reverse a lot of those questions and make people explain themselves.
Really, that's not the Sandler in you, is it?
No.
Sandler trying to hang off.
Yeah. I'd ask, is that a report you want every month? Because that's going to cost you.
Well, good. I think I'd probably say, well, I can just work on the issues that are in their report. I can work off that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we've hit the end of lunch, and it looks like we're going to be skipping the Florida Man versus the World segment.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys had any good stories or not, because we got plenty.
Nope. Florida always wins.
I can't say anything about Florida.
Yeah. Including our governor, who is taking some heat because he openly and publicly called Florida God's waiting room.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that's true, but you don't say it.
It's definitely not politically correct.
Nope. He's fun. All right, guys. Is there anything else that you thought of that you want to, you know, bring out as a point, or any questions that came up on today's topic or any previous topic?
No, I appreciate it. I always enjoy this. I appreciate having me back on.
Yeah, this was fun. I have to say I enjoyed it a lot.
All right. So next time I'll have two other contenders in the Podnuts Pro Fight Club, and I'll have a little bit more one-on-one questions and have you guys, you know, go at each other.
We're really friendly. It's just don't take this the wrong way.
All right, guys, I want to thank you both for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, you've listened to Chris Meraz and AJ Gomber, Oklahoma versus New Jersey was the the pairing we had today. And head over to podnuts.com and take a gander and listen to some of the other podcasts that we've had, some of the other live shows. It seems as though this is becoming a good thing. If not, let me know. If it is a good thing, you can let me know as well. Send an email to marvin@podnuts.com and tell me what you think of the Friday live shows. While you're over on the internet, head over to my show notes page where you can see any of the notes that we talked about. I don't think we have any links for today, but you can still go and click on the Amazon store page. We don't have sponsors here, but if you'd like to support the show, click on that and do your shopping on Amazon just as you normally would. No change in price, but anything that you buy could earn a little commission to come back to the show. Pay for the streaming services that we're providing here, pay for my equipment, and all of that sort of thing. But I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the show. Again, Chris, AJ, thank you for being on. And we'll look to having you back on again. And folks, that's going to do it for Friday, May 1st. And hopefully that helps you run your business better, stronger, faster. Until next time, holla.